we're going to talk about trading micro e-mini stock index futures. Hopefully we'll give you a little different insight than what you've seen before. We're going to talk about using these products to hedge options, to hedge your stock portfolio, and even speculate in the markets. My name is Carly Garner. I am a futures and options broker. I'm located in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're DeCarly Trading. If you're on social media, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I do post a lot of dog pictures. We actually also post YouTube videos. We try to do once a week. It doesn't always work out that way, but we pick a market. We do kind of an expose and what we think might happen in the next week or month or whatever our time frame is. So if you're interested in that, check us out on YouTube. This is our office mascot, Frankie. I always mention that I post Instagram pictures and everyone always asks why I'm not showing my dog pictures in the slideshow. So I've started putting them in. So there she is. I'm a broker, a strategist, an author, do a little bit of everything. I do write a column for Stocks and Commodities magazine. I contribute content to Jim Cramer's Mad Money. I also make appearances on Bloomberg TV relatively often. And I write a couple of in-house newsletters for our brokerage clients. Again, we are a brokerage service. If you're interested in keeping up with the news, commodity market information, that sort of thing, I do recommend you download our mobile app. It's DeCarly Trading. There's a lot of free educational material in there. If you do decide to open an account or you want to sign up for a trial of our newsletter services, we do provide trading commentary and market strategy ideas and things like that within the app. I've written a handful of books. These are the three that are currently available. You will find a couple other if you Google real hard, but they're out of print. We've switched publishers, and so just ignore those. These are the three that I recommend you focus on. The one in the middle, Trading Commodity Options with Creativity, will be out this summer, so it's not quite out yet. The other two are available at any major bookstore or outlet. They're cheapest on Amazon, of course. That's how it works. There's a substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options. I want to make sure everybody understands that before we proceed. It's not suitable for everybody. And actually, I always say it's not suitable for most people. Okay, so we're going to start talking about why trade futures in the first place. I know some of you might be futures traders already here, but I'm assuming most are stock traders, or maybe there's a nice mix of both. So I won't spend a ton of time on this, but I'd want to make sure that everybody does understand the benefits of trading futures as opposed to stocks. And I'm not talking about investing, this is speculating. So they're two different things, keep that in mind. But a lot of people want to talk about buy signals and sell signals and market forecasts and things like that, but they forget to talk about the basics. And so we're going to cover that real quick. So traders tend to flock towards what's familiar, that's stocks and ETFs, because they're convenient. Anyone that followed USO last month knows that convenience is not generally the best choice. USO was an ETF that took investor money as a stock product. It was basically, you could trade it in your stock account. It would take investor money and use that to buy futures. They started with buying front month crude oil futures. That didn't go so well. They started diversifying into the back months. That also didn't go so well. I mean, to make a long story short, that ETF almost single-handedly blew up the crude oil futures market. So there it is. If you're going to trade commodities, I really suggest you do it in the futures market. It's so much more efficient, especially if you're looking to trade with leverage or if you want to be able to sell, whether it's the E-mini S&P or crude oil or whatever it is. It's so much more efficient in the futures market. Now, it's not perfect in futures because there's leverage and that sometimes that's a little too much for people to handle. But hopefully we can give you some ideas today on how to tame the markets a little bit, reduce some of the risk, but still get your foot in the door. So here are the basic benefits of trading futures as opposed to trading stock products. You have around-the-clock market access. Most futures contracts trade 23 hours a day. That is a tremendous advantage. We all know the markets don't sleep just because we're sleeping or because we want to eat dinner. Things are moving. Asset prices are changing. So you might as well have the ability to make changes in your trading account. The futures markets provide free leverage and margin to anybody, regardless of whether you're trading a $2,000 account or a $2 million account. You're all working on the same margining system. That's not the case in stock. If you want to trade on leverage in the stock side of thing, you have to apply for leverage. You have to generally have a bigger account, usually 50 to 100,000 at least. And ETFs are not necessarily that liquid. Futures, as long as you're sticking to the major commodities, the 10 to 15 markets that are most commonly traded, you're going to have plenty of liquidity around the clock. Also, you can buy or sell in any order. There's no uptick rules, no share restrictions, no delays in acquiring shares to short, none of that. If you want to go short, if you think the market's going down, you click a button and you sell. That's it. It's really easy. So just a few more things. There's low account minimums. You can trade futures with as little as a couple thousand dollars. $50. I'm not saying that you should. I'm just saying you can. And again, with a stockbroker, you'd need probably 50, maybe even 100,000 or more to trade on leverage and to go short. There are no interest charges, no borrowing fees in futures. Again, if you want to sell, you go short. You don't have to pay your brokerage interest or anything like that. And orders are treated first come, first serve. This sounds like something that would just obviously happen in any market, but that's really not how it works in the stock world. In futures, if you're trading a one lot and you're ahead of somebody trading 1,000 contracts at a time, you're filled first. Also, futures traders receive favorable tax treatment. It's a 60-40 blend between long-term and short-term gains. And also, it's a lot easier to report to the IRS. You don't have to report individual transactions. You report one number at the end of the year. You either made money or lost money. That's it. So you can save money on some money or headache in your accounting fees. And you're going to pay a lower commission rate. I'm sorry, a lower tax rate, assuming you make money. Now, obviously, I'm going to have to tell you the downside of that. If you're losing money, then the tax benefit actually works against you. But if you're making money, it's a benefit. And of course, anything's possible in commodities. We all know that. We've heard all the stories. I always talk about the trader I once saw turn 10,000 into $500,000 in 2 weeks, and then he lost it all. So those are the kinds of swings that you could see if you traded extremely aggressively. Again, that's not really my personality type, and I'm not advocating that any of you trade that aggressively, but those types of things can and do happen occasionally. Okay, so let's talk about the e-micro contracts specifically, or I guess they're actually micro e-minis is the technical name the exchange uses. So the micro e-mini stock index futures were created by the CME Group, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, to overcome the largest obstacle keeping retail traders from futures, and that's risk. Most speculators or most retail traders, as I mentioned before, flock towards ETFs and stocks for speculating because it's really convenient. I use the analogy, if you need a loaf of bread and you go into a convenience store, it's just that. It's convenient, but it's going to be overpriced and you're not going to have much of a selection. You're just going to get what you get. It's kind of the same thing in finance. If you just take what's the easiest to access, you're probably not getting the most efficient product. You're probably doing yourself a disservice. It's really this, just about anything in life works that way. The micro e-mini futures are 1/10 the size of the traditional e-mini stock index futures. However, despite the fact that they're smaller in size, they have the same leverage, but less risk because they're much smaller. And it gives traders more room for error. Also, they can trade using longer time horizons because the risk per point is so much lower. They can stomach the swings of holding on for a couple of weeks or a couple of months as opposed to a shorter time frame, which was kind of what most traders did with the bigger contract sizes. There are actually micro contracts in gold, the currencies. There are mini contracts in the grains, wheat, soybeans, corn, which are, for all intents and purposes, micro-sized. So it's not like these products only exist in the stock indices, but that's kind of what we're focusing on today. There are micro contracts for the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, the Dow Jones, and the Russell. The S&P is by far the most liquid, but the other three are definitely tradable. Now, keep in mind, there are no options written against the micros. The micro contracts are small enough that it really wouldn't make sense to have options written against them because their options are a tool to hedge or speculate to reduce risk. And so if you're talking about a contract that's very small to begin with, it just doesn't make sense to list options against them. That said, the exchange is very keen in regards to margin policy. They do allow you to use micro futures to hedge your options. So for example, if you're short a put option in the E-mini S&P, you could sell a micro against it to lower your delta. And we'll actually talk about that a little later in this class. So just to kind of give you some bearings, the micro S&P is $5 per point. If you've ever traded the E-mini, you know it's $50 a point. So of course, there's a 1/10 of a difference. If you're trading the micro S&P future, you're trading roughly $15,000 worth of stock with the S&P valued at 3,000. Now, of course, it's an index. So as the S&P moves higher or lower, the notional value of that contract changes. But assuming the S&P was at 3,000, and I know it's a little below that, you'd be trading roughly $15,000 worth of stock. To put that into perspective, if you're buying or selling an E-mini, not a micro, you're trading $150,000 worth of stock. That's a huge difference in terms of risk and reward, right? The NASDAQ's $2 a point, and at current pricing is roughly $18,000 to $19,000 worth of NASDAQ 100 stock. The Dow Jones is 50 cents a point. Current value is roughly $12,000 per contract. And the Russell's a little bit misleading in that it's only $5 a point and the notional value or the contract's value is about $6,700 based on today's prices. So that seems like of all these three, you'd probably look at that and think that's the tamest to trade. And that's actually really not the case. The Russell can move occasionally. A lot of times it doesn't do much of anything, but when it does move, it moves pretty dramatically. And if you're caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, it can be tough. So not saying don't trade the Russell. I'm just saying understand that it's not as low risk as you think it might be just based on looking at the specs. So the micro contracts trade the same time that the E-minis. They're basically open roughly, I'm just going to simplify and say it's open 23 hours a day. The S&P, or the stock indices, I should say, do pause for 15 minutes in the afternoon. Don't ask me why. It's just they've always done it and that's how they do it. So it is what it is. But for our purposes today, we'll just say it's 23 hours. So you can trade these around the clock, which is nice, especially if you're hedging a portfolio. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So the purpose of this slide is really just to give you an idea of what the risk and reward is on an E-mini S&P versus a micro E-mini S&P. We've already talked about it's 1/10 the size, but let's kind of put that into a real world example. This move that we saw up here, oh, I used the wrong tool. Sorry about that. So this move that we saw up here, which was a nice tame slow grind rally that occurred last year, would have made or lost a trader $2,700 in the micro E-mini or $27,000 in the E-mini. Now, obviously, those that are not risk averse, those that like to have, that are comfortable with risk, might think that looking at this, they might think the micro E-mini is a waste of time. But I can tell you one thing, trading is a mental game. And if you're trading beyond your means, and if you're uncomfortable in any way, you're not doing yourself any good. Decisions that are made under duress or under stress are usually bad decisions. So the name of the game is to reduce your stress levels, keep your emotions in check, and hopefully you'll make better decisions. And that's what the micro does for a lot of people. It allows them to position trade or swing trade or even day trade with a lot less emotion involved and still have some skin in the game. Also, it gives them the ability to scale in and scale out of positions, because let's face it, you're never going to buy the low and sell the high. Hopefully, if you get somewhere in the vicinity of the low and the high and you take a piece out of the middle, you'll be doing pretty well. But if you scale in, for example, go long, this is just hypothetical, go long a futures contract at, let's say, down here. Let's say you buy at 2,400, you buy another one at 2,350, you buy another one at 2,200, your average is going to be somewhere in the 2,300 area. As opposed to if you tried to buy all three contracts up at 24, your initial entry, your average price is a lot higher than it would be scaling in. And you can do that on the way in and on the way out, which makes the micros so much more attractive to trade. This fall, obviously, this isn't something you see very often, but had you been short an E-mini futures, you might have made 60 grand. On a micro, you might have made 6 grand. Of course, that's selling the high and buying the low. Nobody did that, I would assume. But if you did, that's what it would look like. And again, this puts things into perspective. With a micro contract, obviously nobody wants to lose 6,000. But if you happen to be caught on the wrong side of a big cascading move like that in a micro, you're probably going to survive and eventually come out, maybe hopefully with a scratch or a small loss, as opposed to if you were in an E-mini, it would be really hard to continue holding a position that's going against you and ride it out. And I'm not saying your strategy even calls for that, but assuming it does. Okay, so let's talk about why trade the E-micros as opposed to the E-minis, which are the larger contracts. The obstacles that are solved by the micro futures are plentiful. For starters, there's less margin concern. The margin for an E-micro right now is $1,320. This is actually double what it was at the beginning of the year, but this is the world we live in. So at the moment, it's $1,300. For one contract. Most retail traders have at least $1,300 in their account, which means they can hold the position overnight. They don't have to worry about getting a margin call if they hold into the close. They're not forced out of the market before the market closes. If you notice at the end of the trading day in the E-mini S&P, the market usually has a short squeeze or a long squeeze towards the end of the day. And that's because all the day traders have to get out, or at least they feel like they have to get out because they just don't have the margin to hold their positions. They're trading beyond their means. So trading with the micros puts people in a position where hopefully they're not trading beyond their means. It gives people lasting power. You're less prone to panic. You probably don't even need a stop loss, depending on your style of trading and that sort of thing. You might be able to trade without a stop loss. I know that's the opposite of what most people will tell you. Everyone says always have a stop. And there's some truth to that. But the reality is sometimes stops do more harm than good. Sometimes you go along a market, you place your stop, you get stopped out. And as soon as you do, the market goes up without you. That happens a lot. There's less account volatility. The minis aren't really really as many, like the e-mini S&P, it used to be a mini, but now it's not so many because the market has gone up and volatility has gone up. So the micro is a much more manageable product. Trading the micros will mitigate emotional turmoil. And again, as we mentioned, it's going to lead to better trading decisions. And if you are bored with the idea of trading the micros, but you have a new strategy and you want a paper trade, but you want a little skin in the game, because we all know paper trading with no money on the line really is, I mean, it's okay. It's going to be helpful in the short run, but in the long run, if you take emotions out of it, it's really just a completely different ball game. So it's not doing you as much good as you think it is. But if you're testing out your strategies with micros, at least you have some skin in the game and you might feel some of that emotion and get a better taste of what's in store. Also, the micros allow traders to speculate with longer time horizons because there's lower margin and the lower risk enables traders to buy and hold more comfortably. So let's talk about position trading or swing trading with micro e-minis. So the great thing about the micros is it allows you to participate in strategies that maybe were previously reserved for larger trading accounts or those with quite a bit of guts. I'll just put it that way. It enables traders to basically buy the dips and sell the rips. If you're trading a bigger contract, it's really hard to do that because the risks are so elevated. With the micro, it's a little easier. Actually, I take it back. It's a lot easier to implement that kind of a strategy. And here's what I mean by that. This is an e-mini S&P chart, and you can see that the market is swinging back and forth, but it's for the most part, stays in a relatively well-defined range, although it does change that range a few times. But you can see from high to low here, it's trading in a channel. Now, if you were trading the e-mini S&P, you probably wouldn't have the guts to go long as the market's hitting support, because even though your technical indicators are lining up, everything's lining up to go long, you're going to look at that and say, heck no. If the market breaks through that and melts down, I'm dead meat. If I place a stop, I'm probably dead meat anyway. I mean, if you lose, the thing about stops is let's say that you're trying to go long in each one of these areas, you're probably going to get stopped out. And let's say you have a $100, $200, $300 stop. If you lose $200 or $300 each and every time, it adds up to quite a bit of money, right? So that's hard to do if you're trading a full-size contract. It's hard to stomach those small losses, but they're very likely to occur because markets are messy. And very rarely are you going to see a market hold support exactly and bounce exactly where you need it to go without you getting stopped out. So with a micro, it's going to be a little more comfortable. You can try to do these types of strategies where you're selling the rips, you're buying the dips. You don't have to wait for confirmation for prices to swing back the other way, that sort of thing. Because we all know that markets turn fast. Sometimes if you're not in it when it turns, you're just chasing it and it's really hard to make money. For example, look at this buy here. This was a textbook buy, everything lined up. But imagine if you waited for confirmation. Let's see if it holds support. And then if it holds support, maybe I'll buy. Well, the market's probably all the way up here, 20 handles higher by the time you realize, hey, it worked. So the micros will give you the ability to actually trade on these kinds of ideas. Now, you're not going to get rich doing this sort of thing, even if your trading is impeccable and you're really great at it. If you notice the swings here in this range start out at about 200. So 200 here, 200 here, 200 here. I mean, obviously that adds up if you're great enough to be able to catch the highs and lows. I'm not saying it would be easy to do this. I'm just saying, giving you an idea of what your risk and reward might be. Towards the bottom end of the channel, the swings are more about 300 or 400. So if you do happen to get in at the wrong place at the wrong time and the market goes against you, like in this particular situation here, it's kind of hard to tell on this chart. But this is a support breaks at about 2810 and goes down to maybe the high 90s, 2790s. So if you were trading an e-mini, you'd be down $500 to $1,000 pretty quickly. And that's frustrating for a lot of smaller traders to handle. You probably would get stressed out. You'd probably give up on the trade. You'd either be stopped out or you'd liquidate and you'd be done. But if you were trading a micro, you might actually feel comfortable enough, assuming everything still lines up and you still think it's a good trade. You might actually, instead of getting out and taking your loss and then watching the market recover without you, you might be comfortable enough to actually add on to the position. Or even if you just hold what you have, you might come out with a scratch or even better. So again, trading the micro is going to give you a lot better lasting power. You can make more sensible decisions. And I think you'd be better off, or at least for most traders. There's no reason to swing for the fence all the time. I know that's the fun thing to do, but the reality is it's not necessary. And if you're swinging for the fence, you're probably in the long run not going to make very much money. So let's talk about portfolio hedging. I'm assuming some of you are stock investors and you may want to protect your assets from time to time. A great way to do that is through the micro e-minis. I know we forget this, but the futures markets were actually created to provide a venue to hedge price risk. That's what they're there for. I know that most of us don't use it for that, but that's actually what they were created for. Futures contracts basically transfer risk from the hedger to the speculator. So you as an investor, you could use the futures, these micro e-mini futures, to hedge your stock portfolio. If you really wanted to fully hedge, and I'm not saying you should, we'll talk about this in a minute, but you don't want to be fully hedged unless the market is really overpriced, or at least you think it's overpriced. But the great thing about hedging in the futures market is you can avoid taxable events. So in other words, instead of getting out of your liquidating all your stock portfolio, you might just sell some futures, some micro futures to hedge it. That way you're not creating a taxable event in your stock account and you're still collecting dividends. So even though you don't have a lot of price risk because you've mitigated it using the futures markets, in other words, as your portfolio goes up, your futures hedge is going to lose money and vice versa, but you're still earning dividends. You're not paying taxes on the gains that you locked in, that sort of thing. So as a reminder, hedging is the practice of taking the opposite position in a correlated asset to mitigate price risk. There really is no such thing as a perfect hedge. It doesn't exist, but if it did, you could do it like this. Let's say that you had $14,000 worth of SPY or some sort of S&P 500 stock in your stock account. Exactly 14,000. I know that's never going to happen. But with this example, if you sold one micro e-mini from 2,800, again, if the micro e-mini is at 2,800, it too is valued at 14,000. So as you can see, this is something that gets a little messier than what we're looking at here, but you'll get the idea. If it was possible to sell exactly $14,000 worth of futures contracts against exactly $14,000 worth of S&P 500 allocated stocks, you'd have a perfect hedge. So you can see what I mean by perfect hedges don't exist. But if you did, you would basically have no price risk because you'd be making on one side and losing on the other, vice versa. The position is locked, but you're still earning dividends and you didn't create a taxable event. So there's definitely benefits. The micro e-mini futures enable investors to hedge portfolio risk with a scalpel. So if you were using the e-mini S&P to hedge, one e-mini S&P would hedge roughly $140,000 worth of stock in your portfolio. That's a decent amount of stock. I mean, even if you're holding a larger portfolio in the millions, that's still a pretty big hedge to have on. But in the micro futures, you can actually pinpoint your hedges because you can do it in increments of 14,000. So I think for most people, that's probably a lot more efficient. And you can hedge using the Dow, the NASDAQ, the Russell, the S&P. So if you have a diversified portfolio, you want to, let's say you're comfortable with all the risks in your portfolio, except for maybe your tech stocks, because the NASDAQ's been flying high. You could use the micro NASDAQ futures to hedge your tech portfolio and hang on to everything else. Or maybe you want to hedge a little bit of everything and you could use micros for all of those sectors. So I'm just giving you some ideas. Again, when you're hedging, you have to keep in mind there's a lot of gray area. There's no black and white. It's not a mathematical formula or an equation you can plug in and get some pretty numbers. It's going to be messy. So the point is to hedge the price risk that you're uncomfortable with and go from there. So this is just a blanket example. If you had a $200,000 stock portfolio and it was allocated in this manner, 20% tech stocks, 30% blue chip, 10% small cap, you could sell micros accordingly. This is to attempt to get a relatively perfect hedge. But the stock market generally goes up all the time. So you really wouldn't want to be fully hedged under most circumstances. In fact, almost never do you want to be fully hedged, because if you look at a chart of the stock market, whether you're looking at the Dow or the S&P over the last several decades, it always goes up. We've had some bad decades, we've had some bad years, but it generally always goes up. So you don't want to always be fully hedged. However, you do want to hedge when you can, not when you must. If the market's really high, you should be hedging. Late last year and early this year, we were out in our newsletters and on our webinars, we were talking about this is the time to hedge. Now, to be 100% honest, we were early. I didn't think the S&P would see 3,400 before it rolled over, but it did. But the nice thing about that is, as long as you can live with giving up the small upside gains in exchange for hedging a good portion of your portfolio, then that's okay. So you want to hedge when the market's high, and you want to peel off those hedges incrementally as the market falls. The one mistake I hear all the time is people put their hedges on, so they do the right things before the market corrects, but then they never take a profit on their hedges. They just leave it there. And we've already discussed the stock market almost always goes up. So even when the market corrects sharply within a few months or sometimes a few weeks, the market often is all going back up again. So if you put your hedges on and and you rode it all the way down, but you never took any profits on those hedges, you almost are worse off than you were had you not done anything. In fact, you probably are. So if you put some hedges on and you make some money on them, make sure you lock some of that in. So this is probably pretty familiar to all of you. This is what we've just witnessed and experienced in the last couple of months. The S&P trades up to the 34 area. Okay, here we go. S&P trades up here to the 34 area before rolling over. I would venture to say that anyone that had hedges on appropriately up here probably failed to hold through the entire decline, or if they did, there's a good chance they're regretting it because now the market's rebounded sharply and it really probably didn't benefit them as much as they thought it might. So with that said, hedging is the same as trading. You're never going to pick the highs or lows. The goal is to reduce your risk, but make sure that you get something for it. For example, a lot of people like to buy put options to hedge the risk as opposed to selling futures. I know that's not really what we're talking about today, but especially if you're buying put options, puts are expensive. So if you keep buying them and buying them, and then when they finally pay off, you never sell them to take the profit, all you've done is shaved off 1% to 3% of your portfolio every year just to have a little peace of mind. It really doesn't make any sense. So more often than not, people that are hedging are probably going to start taking profits up in here in this area as opposed to, I mean, very few people could have saw this coming. So it might have been a little stressful to take your hedge off and see the market continue lower. But with that said, you have to keep in mind, even if you pulled off your hedge here or here, you're still much better off than you would have been had you not had a hedge, or you're not any worse off had you ridden the hedge all the way down and then all the way back up. So everything should be put in perspective. You're never going to get perfect when it comes to timing on the way in or the way out. But the point is, hopefully you save 10, 15, maybe even 20% on the correction. So I'm going to switch to, now the markets are closed, so it's not really going to be a live chart, but I just want to take a look at the S&P and kind of give you some ideas on how you might speculate using the micros. Now this is a chart of the E-mini S&P. So one thing to keep in mind, if you are trading in the micro, you probably want to chart the E-mini S&P because it's more liquid. You're going to get your trading signals will be a little more accurate, a little more efficient. So what I would suggest you do is you look at the E-mini S&P chart, and then you decide from there what your signals are to execute in the mini, I'm sorry, in the micro contract, if that makes sense. A lot of people will try to chart the micro, which I have actually have in a tab here, and it's fine, but the support and resistance areas aren't going to be as clean as they are on the E-mini. So I would recommend charting the E-mini and trading the micro. Okay. So with that said, it used to be like 3 or 4 months ago, if you wanted to day trade the micro, it just wasn't possible. It was kind of a joke. The market didn't move enough for that to happen. The S&P was moving 5 to 10 points a day. The micro is only worth $5 a point. So if the daily trading range is only $50 to $100 on a micro, it's really hard to day trade something like that to make it worth your while to sit in front of a computer. But in today's world, that's changed. In today's world, we're getting the S&P moving 50 to 100 points in a day, and that can add up to some real money. So the micro is perfectly fine for swing trading as well as day trading. So I'm not giving you any recommendations. I'm not going to teach you. I'm not trying to teach you any particular strategy. That's not what we're trying to do. But I'm just trying to give you like an idea of how you might apply the e-micros to your trading. So what we tend to do is we look at a daily chart and we get an idea of where we think the major areas of support and resistance are. The market's obviously trading in a range between. Didn't anticipate that. Okay, sorry about that. Hopefully you can still see my screen. So the market's trading between 2980-ish. To 3,000, and then on the downside, 2750 to 2700 area. So now that we have that big picture, we can take a look at if you're trading the micro on a swing basis or an intraday basis, I'd say go with a 60-minute chart. Of course, trading is a game of finding what works for you and your personality and your particular signals. So what I would recommend is a 60-minute chart. Maybe you want to go with a 90-minute chart. That's okay too. You probably don't want to do a 5-minute chart or a 10-minute chart. The signals are just going to be, they're not going to produce enough of a price movement. It's going to be too choppy for this type of a thing. But if you go with a longer term, at least 30-minute, preferably 60-minute, and maybe even a 90-minute chart, I think you'd be better off. So a popular method of this type of trading is using moving averages. This is just a simple 5-day, or I should say 5-period and 13-period move. moving average. The support and resistance lines are areas that we've come up with based on our internal volatility models. And at the bottom, it's just a simple RSI. So what I would say with something like everyone has a different personality. Some people are trying to trend trade. Some people are trying to do other things. But with the micros we mentioned, you can try to employ strategies that maybe you couldn't do with the bigger contracts because you have some more room for error. So my personality tends to favor counter trend trading. I just like the idea of selling a market when it's a little expensive and buying it when it's a little cheap. So a real easy way to do that, and again, I'm not saying this is the holy grail of trading. I'm just giving you some ideas. Anytime you see the RSI overbought or oversold, it's probably an inclination that maybe you should pay a little more attention to the sell signals if it's overbought and the buy signals if it's oversold. Doesn't always work. Nothing always works. But you can see the moving average crossovers on a micro can produce some decent moves. Again, we are charting the full-size contract, so I'm going to do a calculator here. Assuming you took a signal somewhere in here and wrote it up on a mini, that's a $5,000 move. That'd be absolutely great if you could do it on a mini. On a micro, it's only about $500, $550, but just imagine how stressful it might be to get into a mini here and see your profits and losses jump hundreds of dollars in minutes, and that's just the environment we're in. In a micro, if you took this sell signal, you might get somewhere around 400. So I'm just trying to give you some ideas. Some of these false signals might add up. Let's say you go short here and then you end up probably getting bumped out. That'd be a loss of somewhere around $100 to $200 on a micro. So I'm just trying to give you kind of an overall idea of how trading this in the short run might work. I'm going to go back to the slideshow. So if you've ever come to any of our webinars or been to our website, you know that we tend to talk a lot about option trading. We tend to advocate option trading. It's one way that retail traders can pull some of the volatility out of the markets. I mean, the reality is trading is hard. Most people lose money because it's difficult to do. I mentioned it's a mental game. Using options to reduce the stress and risk and volatility of your trading account is one way to attempt to beat that mental game. So with that in mind, let's talk about how we can use the micros to maybe hedge some option trades. If you're a short option trader, you know that it's nice to have a hedge. Most options expire worthless. So the idea is if you sell options, you're already ahead of the game. But the reality is while most options expire worthless, and if you're an option seller, you're probably going to make money on most trades, maybe even 9 out of 10 or 8 out of 10. But it's the 1 out of 10 or the 2 out of 10 that you lose on that could really cause you some trouble. So it's nice to have a hedge. One idea is with the micros, you could do something like a covered call. For example, in an environment like the one that we're in, the option premium is really expensive on the call side. A lot of people tend to think the market's a little ahead of itself. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But you could put together a strategy that kind of gets the best of both worlds, and I'll show you how that works. And to give you an idea of how a micro hedges your options, the micro has a delta. Let's just start with this. Delta is the rate of change in an option position relative to the change in futures price. So if you're trading an e-mini S&P option and it has a delta of 50%, that means that option will change in value half of what the futures market moves. If the futures market moves 10 points, your option moves 5 points. Okay, so with that in mind, because the micro is 1/10 of a full contract, we can basically say the delta of a micro is 1/10 of a contract or 10%. So if we sell an option that has a delta of 20 and then we go long a futures contract to hedge that option with a delta of 10, that reduces our delta to 10 and it increases our profit potential quite a bit and it gives us a hedge on the upside. So we'll show you what that might look like. Okay, so this is an example just a hypothetical example, obviously not a recommendation, that I took a snapshot of a few days ago. So let's say that you think the S&P is going to move sideways to slightly higher, but mostly sideways. You could do something like this. Go long a micro futures contract at 2780 and then sell an e-mini call option with a 3050 strike price. At the time, and it's actually changed quite a bit, but at the time you could have collected about $28 or $1,400. So that $1,400 you collect will cushion your micro futures contract all the way down to 2500. So the only way for you to lose at expiration is if the market's either below 2500, because at that point the losses on your futures contract exceed the gains on your short option. So down here you would lose, or if you're too right and the market goes above 3050 and it goes up enough to where your long micro futures just isn't hedging your upside risk anymore. So above 3100, you'd start to lose money. Anywhere in between, you make something, but the risk is theoretically unlimited above 3100 and below 2500. So you can see that gives you a 600 point range in the S&P to make something. I think those are pretty good odds. I mean, I could be wrong and anything can happen, but that looks like a good prospect to me. So let's talk about how much you might make if everything goes perfectly. If everything goes perfectly and the S&P future is trading at 30.50 at expiration, your option expires worthless. So you made 1400 there and you picked up some money on the micro futures contract. So you could make as much as roughly 2700, 2750 on a position that had a 600 point profit range. So that's pretty good. Now, if the market is trading below 30.50, the profit's obviously going to be less, depending on what the difference is between your profit and loss on the futures and what you made on the option, which is $1,400. So you can see it's not easy and convenient like trading futures. You're trading futures, you can see, okay, I buy here, I sell here. That's how much I made. But the reality is when you're trading futures outright, there's no give. There's no room for error. You can't put a strategy together where you make money in a 600 point range with the market trading sideways. So that's the great thing about options. I just happened to notice someone's asking what is the primary product we're talking about here. And it's the E-mini S&P, the ES. So this is all on the futures side of things, not the stock side of things. So in conclusion, for those that are looking to speculate with lower risks, less stress, and better odds of success, I think the micro futures are a good answer to that. Also, if you're looking to hedge your portfolio risk to manage risk or avoid a taxable event, they are also a good product for that. I hope that you picked something out in today's class. I hope there was something there that would help you. If not, you can visit decarlytrading.com and we have about 40 to 45 videos, educational videos. They're all free to access. So be my guest. And again, I've written these books are available at all major book outlets, Higher Probability Commodity Trading and A Trader's First Book on Commodities. And we actually have a BOGO deal going on, a buy one, get one free. If you buy Higher Probability Commodity Trading, an autographed copy, we'll give you the other one for free. You can go to any of our social media sites and you'll find the link to that. And this is my contact information. So if I missed anything or I didn't get to anything, feel free to contact me. I do see there's some questions here. I can try to scroll through and make sure they all get answered. Rick is asking about soybeans, grains, OJ. Rick, visit our website, decarlytrading.com. We have several videos on those types of things. And actually, you can sign up for a free trial of our newsletter. We do, like I mentioned, we kind of do a write-up every week on a particular commodity. This week, it was natural gas. The week before that was treasuries. But we do a lot in soybeans and grains and things like that. Somebody's asking what the reason is that people do not take profits on hedges. I think there are quite a few answers to that. But I think the primary one is that they're scared. It's hard to take a hedge off because you have that hedge there for a reason. Because you're trying to protect yourself. And so once you take that protection off, you feel naked. And you know, there's all the craziness in the world can happen and there's no limit to the craziness. And so we've seen that a few times in the markets in the last couple of decades. So I think it's more fear than anything. But the reality is if you've got enough time on your hands, eventually you could probably ride out the stock market. Enough time and wherewithal, you could probably ride out just about any wave in the stock market, at least in the US anyway. If you look at overseas markets, it's not really that easy. Okay, so the platform that I was using and looking at throughout the presentation, that's called QST. It's Quick Screen Trading. It's one of the platforms that we offer at our brokerage service, and it's actually excellent. I personally use it every day, and I love it. It's not the cheapest, but it's probably one of the best. Unfortunately, they're not the best at marketing, so not many people have heard of it, but it's actually really great. So quickscreentrading.com is their website. And David did post a link to the buy one, get one free offer if you're interested. Okay, so someone's asking, like in those trading examples that we were using, would you be required to hold positions overnight? And yes, you would be. The thing is, I know a lot of people are reluctant to hold positions overnight because they're scared to go to sleep at night, that sort of thing, and not know what's going on. And I completely understand that. The idea of the micro is hopefully it's a small enough contract that you're comfortable doing that. And even if you don't necessarily go to sleep with a position on, you can at least hold it beyond the close. That's where a lot of people get hurt. If you notice, the S&P will make a big move right before the close. And then once the market closes and reopens for the next session, it goes the other way. That happens a lot. And the reason is all the day traders had to get forced out because they didn't have the margin to hold their position into the close. Remember, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange only measures margin on the close of the day. So you could technically be, as long as you're within margin at the close, you can put the positions right back on when it it reopens. So with all of that shuffling going on, if you can't hold your position through the close, you're going to get caught up in the herd trying to get in and out of positions because of their margin concerns. Also, no matter what trading strategy you're using, whether it's moving average signals or RSI or whatever it is, those signals do not care if you have to be out by the close. They're going to work based on price action and time, regardless of what your personal timing is. The market just doesn't care. So if you really want to give your trading strategy a chance to work, it needs to have the ability to hold into the close. And again, you can, in the futures markets, they're open 23 hours. So you can hold it beyond the 4 p.m. central close. And then by 5 p.m. central, the market's reopened. You might want, after dinner, maybe you can offset your trade then, and you probably be a little better off. Okay. I guess I was a little quick. Is there any other questions or anything that I missed? So I guess since I have an extra minute, I will mention I've just finished my latest book. It's a book specifically on option trading. And I can honestly say it was the most difficult project of my entire life, because option trading is, you're all constantly chasing something down the rabbit hole. There's just so many different obstacles and theories and things that you can, I mean, there's just no end. The book is double the length of any of my other books. And to be honest, I feel like I left things out. So that's going to be interesting, but it will be available this summer. So if you're interested in options, I hope you at least take a look.